many hats, which is what we do in primary care. So I'll be just turning it over to myself. My name again is Karin Johnson. and I am a research associate at the McCall Center for Healthcare Innovation. And I'm just going to move for a few time for you. I appreciate the timekeeping offer. I will be using my e-device here, and I, like Ethan, will not be immune from its little beeping at the end. So let's see. Okay, I don't think these are technically APHA disclosures, but I like to over-disclose. So I'm an employee of Group Health Cooperative. We provide health insurance and health care, and this project was funded by the Commonwealth Fund. We're very grateful to them. The views presented are those of mine and my co-authors and not necessarily them. So what I want to talk to you about today is just give you a very brief overview of what's involved in the patient-centered medical home transformation. Most of you are probably pretty familiar with that. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're learning to help implementation, and that sets up the conceptual framework. And then I'll talk about how we turn that into Coach Medical Home as sort of a scale-up effort for technical assistance programs that are trying to help with PCMH implementation. So, as you may have gathered at this conference, if you were not already sort of familiar with it, we have some problems in healthcare in this country. It's not working great, it's expensive, our outcomes aren't very good, and in primary care, people are really burnt out. The good news is that there's growing awareness that this just isn't working very well, and there's a lot of efforts at the federal, state, and private sector level to try and improve this, and the patient-centered medical home implementation, of course, is a huge policy effort right now. And this isn't easy, though. For most practices, this is a pretty big change in culture and in workflow. It's going from reactive to proactive care and from fragmented to coordinated care. And that takes a lot of work, and it doesn't just mean working harder, it means working really, really differently. And so some of the things you need to do to get this going are listed on the right there. You have to modify job descriptions, you have to learn new ways of using your tools, you have to learn new ways of working as staff and as leaders. And I love this quote from Paul Nutting. It makes it so clear that change is hard enough, transformation to a PCMH requires epic, whole practice, reimagination, and redesign. It can be a lot of work. The good news is that we're far enough along with PCMH implementation in this country that we're starting to see some real insights about how it can be done effectively and what works with the implementation. And one of those is this five-year, five-state safety net medical home initiative that recently wrapped up, also funded by the Commonwealth Fund. And so what have we learned from the Safety Net Medical Home Initiative? One of the key learnings is that there's an actionable sequence of steps that you can take in a practice to go through PCMH transformation. The building block is that you have to have engaged leadership and you have to have a quality improvement strategy. Those are foundational. From that, you can build these new systems within a practice that let you empanel patients and build care teams. And then from there, you can build care processes, like, for example, a registry that lets you reach out to patients. And once you've got that down, and at the same time, too, you can work on better ways of getting people into your practice and also getting care in the community. So that's nice in theory, but how do we put it into practice? And so these are our implementation insights from the Safety Net Medical Home Initiative and from looking at the literature on scale up and spread. So you have to start with a practice that has, you know, some desire to do this and some capacity to do this. And then the second thing that we've learned that really helps is to have some sort of external infrastructure. And that can be in a large health system. It could be their QI department. But in places that don't have that, you can really benefit from an external support infrastructure, which is what we had in the Safety Net Medical Home Initiative. And we're seeing it in lots of other medical home demos as well. In that, we found this package is helpful to have change concepts, which is our theoretical framework to working through the process. Obviously, you need to be able to pay for it. You need to have tie-in to whatever is going on at the state and federal level. Measurement is super important, and people need to learn how to be able to use their data for improvement. Peer-to-peer learning works so great. So that people can, as they work through these challenges, they see what their, you know, what their neighbors are doing and similar practices. And then finally, practice facilitation. And so I just wanted to drill down on practice facilitation a little bit. How many folks in the audience are familiar with practice facilitation or coaching? Okay, good. Some. So practice facilitation, also known as coaching, is what I like to call the active phase of capacity building. So these are individuals. They may be based at primary care associations. It's a really common place. They can also be within QI departments that work directly with a practice, not telling them what to do, but helping them build these change and improvement skills. And they do that in a number of ways. They have to have great interpersonal skills and relationship building skills because they set up a process and they set up these norms where people are working together as teams. And then technical skills and quality improvement and change management. And then they have to have a really good sense of what's going on in the community so that they can connect practices to learning communities and also a consultation around health IT. For those that haven't seen a lot about coaching, I'd encourage you to read. There's a great article by Atul Gawande on the spread of slow ideas. I think it's called, does anyone know? Slow Spread or something. It came out pretty recently. Anyways, he had a really nice story in there about talking to a health extension agent, which is sort of another term for a practice facilitator. And he was talking to someone who benefited from this program in India, where they were working on trying to help implement this checklist of practices that would help babies do better after they're born. And he's interviewing this nurse about how it worked with the extension agent. And he said, why did you listen to her? She doesn't know as much as you do. She has only a fraction of your experience. And the nurse said, yeah, in the beginning she didn't. And it just seemed like it was going to be a lot of work. The first day she came, I felt the workload was going to increase. But then from the second time, she began feeling better, and she said she even began looking forward to her visit. Why, I asked. Well, she was nice. What? She was nice, that was all? Well, she smiled a lot. It wasn't like talking to someone trying to find mistakes. So you have all this accountability, and then you have someone who helps you through, and that's where a practice facilitator comes in. So, with all that as background, I wanted to talk a little bit now about how we tried to take this information that we were learning and scale it up into something where it could be useful for other technical assistance programs. And this was pretty hard because the PCMH field is advancing so rapidly that it was kind of like trying to build the tracks while the train is still on it in many ways. There's new evidence coming out, I think, every day about what works and what doesn't work in patient-centered medical home implementation. It's a really rapidly developing field. But at the same time, the evidence is rapidly developing, but the implementation is proceeding apace. You know, we're not going to wait until we know what else we can do. And at the time that we were developing this curriculum, CMS had just launched the advanced primary care demo to turn 500 FQHCs into patient-centered medical homes, and people were just, you know, grasping for tools. And so it was a real challenge, and I'm sure, you know, many of you are in a similar situation with your programs where you're trying to, you know, build resources and find resources really fast. And so our approach to that was, you know, we did this comprehensive literature scan looking in the PCMH literature to date on what's been published about the implementation, so not the outcomes, but how they structure their programs. And we looked a little broader, too, at what's been done in the past in chronic disease collaboratives and similar efforts that were relevant. So that was our evidence base. We brought in a users group to advise on how to kind of build the right framework that balanced sort of findings from the literature with actionable tools. We settled on a web-based format because we knew stuff would be changing and we need to be able to swap it out. And then we drafted and edited iteratively, really trying to find these tools, and then we'd switch them out if we found something new. And then finally, we did a really soft launch. We launched February 1st of this year, but we didn't do any announcement right away. We just did some targeted outreach with folks and said, hey, is this hitting the mark? And then we had a chance to actually refine it before we did our dissemination. And now we're here disseminating. So this is how we structured the modules. We cover the content that was shown in that diagram about the packages of an effective, or the components of an effective TA package, and then added to that is sort of actionable information about how you get started, how you move through it, and then how you sustain and spread. I wanted to show you how each module is structured because this is our approach to balancing sort of that at-a-glance detail you might want if you want to just get a tool that you can use as a technical assistance program provider, and then balancing that with more of a deep dive information. So each module has these learning objectives, and learning objectives are so important. You have to spend a lot of time on those because it helps you be clear about your audience and what you're trying to do with them. There's highlights so that as a user you can go in and just see if it's what you're interested in or not. And then action steps and tools that I'll show you more on the next slide. And you can see on the right that we have a facilitator's handbook for each module if folks want to learn more. And then that same graphical content is available as a PowerPoint presentation so that as folks are learning the content, they can use the same content. They can just modify it and they can use it in training. So we're creating really usable information. And then this is the last bit of content. It's just to give you a sense of the kinds of tools that we decided to use. So you can see those last two. One is business case talking points. So that gets folks, it gives them information that they can use in communicating with leadership. We know that sometimes our practice facilitators, it's really hard to talk with leadership because it's not their peers necessarily. So this is a real training need we found that we were trying to address. And then we also developed a PCMH return on investment calculator so that people can use that to help make the business case. So, I'm right on time, yay. So I hope that's been useful. I hope that you might check out the information on either of our websites, coachmedicalhome.org or safetynetmedicalhome.org. And I also hope that this is helpful to you as you think through how you can, you know, develop resources that help get the information that you're working on out into the field so that others can benefit from it. These are my great colleagues who worked with me on this presentation based at the McCall Center for Healthcare Innovation at Group Health and at Qualis Health. And we're in Seattle where it doesn't rain all the time. It only rains between November and June. So thank you. Okay.